So, folks, here we are. We're in a construction site right now. I said Carl will be probably playing some hammers and cranes and, like, people on. You're like, hey, get that bucket over here. Here we go. We're doing it in here. We got it. The bunker is under construction right now. We're building out. We're digging trenches closer to the enemy, so to speak, in a certain sense. So the next few weeks are going to be a little wild. I'll talk about later what we have planned. But for right now, we're just going to do a fun one with the gang. Bill is here, Carl is here. So yeah, away we go. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast, I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. Man, we got shit going on that you don't even know. We're going to redo this studio like the likes of which people don't. And the funny thing is, no one's ever going to see it. Only if you're a guest here or in here, you're ever going to see it. So it doesn't. That's fine for me. I got the fanciest shit just for guests. I don't care. I saw these chairs from Burrow. I don't know.
Burrow.
They were like, what do you think about these chairs? I was like, I like them. I was like, I need two, though. Well, that'll be, you know, $7,500.
There you go.
I don't care. Yeah. I'm like, look, I had budgeted 10 grand for two chairs, so it's fine. You know, whatever. It's fine. I don't care. And then we don't even do video. So fuck it. Bill, thank you for coming.
Rob, it's great to be here.
Just wait. You just wait. Carl is here, as always. Thank you for joining. And today, I think we're gonna riff on some local news and talk about things that are going on. We're living right now. Here comes a helicopter over. We can hear it now because the we're stripped down. We're actually out in the open. we could actually take sniper fire, but we're that brave. We're recording. With our heads sticking out of the
tarp is just billowing in the wind right now.
Yeah, look,
we're holding on for dear life.
Orwell got shot in the neck for sticking his head up like this. Yeah, I think we just want to talk about some sort of local news stuff. We're living right now, I believe, in Bethany Hall Long's Delaware. We're right now living under the Bethany Hall Long administration. She's our leader right now, and yeah, I guess I just want to start off with. Whether you guys went to the inauguration, how you feel about this, how you feel about her leading Delaware right now.
Isn't it apropos during a pandemic we had to wear gloves? We have an ancient, over 200 year of age Bible, and we have to have gloves. So Dr. Sandy Gibney, who just rescued the young lady who is fine, is getting to put her gloves on, and we're going to have our pledge. And those who know me, we just improv, and we're flexible.
I think she's doing a great job so far.
Yeah, I mean, one day down, I think about 15 to go.
Can she make it 2 weeks?
I did not attend. That was, I think, the day after our big snow day this week. But I did tune in. I kind of had like a tab open in my browser. Like, I'll check it out at 1 o'clock. I bet this only takes like 10 minutes. And whenever the video got started, it kind of sounded like... like two ham radios, one of which was like projecting sound, the other one was recording it with like a tape recorder device, and then coming through the computer. So it was difficult. It was like a classic, you know?
They're calling it an airstrike in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah. Well, it was in the old state house, so it kind of looked period appropriate as well.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. They gave them all of the worst stuff. Because they had the crappy microphone, they had the crappy cameras. Like if you look, it looks like it was filmed in 2006.
That's a great way of putting it.
And they had a translator, but the translator was set up in such a way that I guess they didn't have enough room. So every time someone stood up, you couldn't see the translator, and specifically, you could only see Pete Schwarzkopf.
Okay,
who was so the guy who was sitting there in the path of the translator?
I was like only 50-50 on whether it was Pete or just another like unfortunately. Purely bald.
Just another wad of chewed bubblegum.
Yeah.
I think it was Pete. I'm not 100% certain.
He looked maybe a little older than Pete. I, this guy could have been in his 80s, this poor guy. But yeah, he was. I was like, why is there this like little picture in picture of this man's scalp?
Well, it's funny that you said that, because this is a kind of a thing I wanted to bring up in relation to like Democrats. You know, we just talked about this dumb special election thing that just happened. Somebody sent out a photo of Tom Gordon at an event, and I mean, this guy, I mean, looked like maybe he has 3 months to live. I don't know. He didn't look great. And I just think, like, that's the Delaware Democratic Party, bro. That's what it is. I mean, it's just like, it's actually the Democratic Party. There was news this week that Nancy Pelosi has a walker. So she's on her, what I'm calling her, her Dianne Feinstein arc. Mm. You know, she'll be pushed. There was another congressperson or senator who was like, has just been put into a home, but nobody knew. She's like still in Texas or something.
Yeah.
So she's just, you know, they just put her in a home, but nobody knew. She's like still in the Senate. It's fine.
Right.
But yeah, real patriots, January 21st, we got to meet at the Capitol. We got to stop the steal. Meyer the Liar cannot take office. We already have our ideal governor. We don't need.
We have a governor now.
Yeah.
She's, give her a chance.
She won. She's in office.
Nurse us back to health.
Yeah. She's our first fiscally. Nurse. She's our second woman governor and first nurse governor in the nation.
So this week, John Carney sat down with, I originally was calling it an exit interview, but I think it's a, I think it's more of a demotion interview. Like, hey, let's assess the situation now that your ass got demoted by the Democratic Party. And it was a, we spoke at length with Jake Owens, our friend. I was a little bit disappointed in how it went, but, Bill, what was your, I mean, I, to be honest with you, I didn't read it when it came out because I knew I would just get like upset. But of course, then everybody has to send me all like the little quotes and the little snippets. So now I'm chest deep in it. But as another Wilmingtonian, I mean, this is our new mayor. What do you make of it?
So I first tracked it down. It was the snow day, as I mentioned earlier this week, and popped it on as I was shoveling snow, kind of like late afternoon, very, very solemn activity. And I thought it was an appropriate soundtrack. I don't know. I also maybe saw that it was an article first and didn't really, I was like, I bet this will just be a lot of like sort of non-substantive answers. But for whatever reason, I think listening to it was kind of helpful just to, I don't know, just to feel the pessimism. And kind of, do you know, like, I maybe just start there. It's like, cause this is just a little aside anecdote, but I remember, I think last year we had a, Working Families Party of Delaware, Wilmington meeting. It was like a local hangout in someone's living room on a Sunday afternoon. I think I'll speak for myself, but I know a lot of us kind of go there sometimes, maybe like, here's the stuff I want to talk about. Here's the stuff that's like grinding my gears. And, our facilitator that day was like, what's your favorite thing about living here? A rather simple question. Like, you know, you'd ask it of a 5-year-old.
It's a good question. Yeah.
But it's a great question among activists who otherwise kind of had like the storm cloud over their head. And it was so cool to hear like what made you happy to live in the city of Wilmington, the city where I've grown up. And I just don't kind of get that vibe with this exit interview.
No, I mean, it's look, there's my issue, I guess, is that, And I know nobody is going to do this in a, you know, sort of a legacy media or I'm doing my fucking air quotes, respectable media sort of outlet. But I don't see how anybody can say like, yeah, it's unprecedented that somebody went from this office to this office. Yeah, it's unprecedented because it's fucking crazy. Like he took a demotion. The Delaware Democratic Party is in a position where they didn't want a black lady to be mayor, so they would just ask the governor to do it because he lived in Wilmington. And because he's a stooge of the party, he just did it. And I don't feel like that aspect of this, like the only thing that's ever said, and it was said in the Jake Owens interview, was like this unprecedented move. This never, like, in recent, in modern history, we don't know of any, like, just say that it's fucking weird.
Yeah, it's a real oddity.
Fucking oddball, but nobody will say, like, oh, yeah. It's so weird.
Like, it's something that'll pop up in, like, whatever conglomerate owns the Cincinnati Inquirer this week in the sort of like other news category. It'd be like Delaware governor becomes mayor. Like, you know, it's just like one of those odd three paragraph stories.
Yeah, in the Indianapolis Star.
Yeah.
They're like, this guy who has the face of a fucking wooden puppet has taken a demotion to make sure that the black lady wasn't the mayor, because the state is basically a bunch of if the Chamber of Commerce could be described as inbred, like that's what it is. You know what I mean? That's what it is. But we have to like skirt around it. We had to be like, oh, it's unprecedented, or oh, he's committed to public service. No, that's not what's happening. And I just find it. I don't care because no one's ever going to do it. Like I love Jake, but you know he's not going to do it. No one's going to do it because they just that's not how it's done. And so you get just fake news, basically. It's fucking crazy to me.
Sorry, since you said wooden face puppet or something, I've just been imagining him in like the Mr. Rogers alternate dimension with Daniel Tiger, Miss Elaine, etc.
Yeah, Lady Elaine Fairchild.
Lady Elaine Fairchild.
Fucking train. Yeah, he's a fucking goofball. And we're just supposed to believe, like, oh, he's the best. Like, he's a cipher. He's an empty-headed cipher. And look, I think I don't recommend listening to the interview, but you can if you want.
Yeah, it's 40 minutes. It goes probably a little longer than the transcript article.
Yeah, they didn't. I don't think there was much editing to it.
There are some interesting. I don't know. It was someone had sort of made a comment about some perceived bias in the interview, and I was like it was a little too buddy buddy.
Really?
I didn't quite.
Was
pick
that like
up
in the comments or like?
It was on social media,
Facebook,
a frequent poster, I'd say.
Oh, okay.
But someone who like is certainly like I could honestly see having that perspective, but I just wanted to see clarification. Like, which way did you think it was biased? Like, did you think that it was too lenient on him, or because I thought Jake asked him some fairly point blank questions. John just wouldn't let him finish the question. And then the one I'm thinking of is the one about like corporate welfare to encourage Amazon to build a warehouse here.
You know, Delaware is not alone in giving some of these, you know, strategic grants to, you know, companies like Amazon.
No, in fact, the reality is I'm going to anticipate your question.
Does it ever give you heartburn?
We compete every single day. And so to all these critics who say we shouldn't do that and giving away corporate welfare, whatever it is, when everybody else stops doing it, then we compete with these folks, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, in the region and outside the region, then okay, then maybe we should consider not doing it as well. But I don't want to unilaterally make a decision that we're going to pull back and therefore not compete. Well, right. So a lot of times we're not successful because we're not that big. We don't have the resources that a bigger state does. And so I think that the critics of that need to get a dose of the real world and how these corporate decisions are made.
Sure.
I guess the whole thing, and that's true, he did sort of a little evasion, but I think he feels comfortable. He will only talk to at length somebody he's comfortable doing that with. And I don't know who made this comment on Facebook.
No, the only part that kind of ground my gears was a suggestion that like we're still waiting to see what direction Spotlight's going to take, what their bias is going to be like. Can they be a trusted periodical? Okay. And I was like, no, I'm pretty much pot committed with them right now. I think they do a great job.
Oh, so somebody was just questioning the whole sort of like, is this journalism where you need access journalism or whatever?
Exactly.
Well, I will say this again, and I love Jake. I love everybody there. I love Nick and everybody, but I think what people are reacting to is the idea that everybody knows this is absurd. Like this fucking doofus took a demotion in the context that I said before. So everybody kind of knows it's weird, but nobody will just come out and be like, well, "That's fucked up, huh?" And so people don't get that. Like, it's not a confrontational interview. It's not an adversarial interview. Like, he'll ask a difficult question, and then whatever Carney says is the answer. You know, I actually, when we were talking about it yesterday, I guess, I juxtaposed it with the New York Times reporter who did the exit interview for Blinken.
Yeah.
And really pressed him on genocide, on why Ukraine can defend itself, but the Palestinians can't. All this kind of stuff. Like, what is your, like, your legacy is shot to hell. You know, just the vibe of that conversation seemed confrontational. The vibe of Jake and Carney just seemed like, well, I'm going to ask a difficult question in the easiest terms that we can possibly word it, so it doesn't look as confrontational as it could be, but I have to sort of ask this question. He did the same thing with, like, the progressive movement.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to ask this question in the most sort of gentle way I can, and then whatever dumb shit you say, we're just going to leave it there.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I took it from it.
Yeah. And the answer to that is we had 16 years of uninterrupted Republican leadership via governor in the state. And he was sort of fondly nostalgic for that era. It's cool.
Yeah, he's
a
cool guy.
That's going to be the answer.
Yeah, well, the biggest part of the answer, and this is probably what we should get to now. I don't know if Carl will play it here or what, but part of his answer about, like, this progressive shift was that, you know, we didn't have these 16 years of Republican governors, which he seems to, like, really pine for and yearn for, but the new ideas and the new faces and the leftist shift are mostly just young people who don't know what they're doing and don't have any, like, real world experience.
That kind of speaks to one of the things you and I have talked about in the past is really maybe it's because of your mentors over the years, looking at Tom Carper and Ruth Ann Minner and some of these other kind of traditional centrist Democrats, but we're starting to see more progressive Democrats start to win seats, especially here in Delaware, thinking about David McBride's loss and Valerie Longhurst's loss most recently, Peter Schwarzkopf being replaced by Claire Snyder Hall. Do you worry that the classic kind of Delaware way position is starting to wane, or do you think it will endure?
I do worry. I think one of the, I learned and came up in a Delaware political environment which was pretty balanced, where we had 16 years of Republican governors,
right.
Pete DuPont and Mike Castle back to back, and haven't had one since. And increasingly, the registration has been, as the National Republican Party has become more far-right driven, you know, Donald Trump has taken it even further with a kind of a crazy far-right approach to things. Delaware has become more Democratic, like, in response.
Yeah.
Most of the Republicans, the Mike Castles, even Pete DuPont, were moderate Republicans. And they tend to be a little bit more pro-business. But the Tom Carper, Ruth Ann Minner mold is more of a pro-business Democrat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I consider myself. And it worries me a little bit about what's even, I think, more worrisome or requires more work is that the newly elected members of city council and the legislature are very young.
Yeah.
And haven't had a lot of real world experience, particularly in employment and in the business sector.
Yeah, so what deals have you done lately? Yeah, who has John Carney worked for in the business sector? Can we look that up?
The Catholic Church.
That is technically a business. It's a pedophile business, but it is a business. Yes, that's true. So he used the word business sector. So my question to Mayor Markell is, where did you work in the fucking business sector? Nowhere.
I mean, I could read out all his actual jobs that he held.
Yeah, Let's go. This is the John Carney CV. This is the curriculum vitae. The curriculum vitae of our new mayor, Mayor John Markell.
Yeah. So, for full disclosure, this is just going off of what was available in the newspaper, because that is what I have access to, because he does not actually put his real resume anywhere, as far as I can tell. But basically, went to St. Mark's. He was a football star.
CTE head injuries.
And then went to college, came back to UD for graduate school, and basically was in graduate school for, it seems like, 10 years or something. I don't know, you know, fudging the numbers there.
Well, you know, sometimes your PhD, it's like your best friend, but it's also your enemy.
The other thing is sometimes you're at university and you run into legal trouble. You know, sometimes people you're with, you do drugs and drink, and people get killed. And you run into legal trouble sometimes, and you really get jammed up there. So, you know, I don't know. It happened. It does happen, yeah.
But, so yeah, he was in grad school and coaching football for a little bit. And then in 1984, he was at the age of 28. He was appointed as a legislative aide, which he served in for less than a year, before being hired as assistant director for the Catholic Youth Organization, where he was in charge of the athletic programs. And so I don't have exact dates.
He was a CYO basketball referee.
Yeah.
I think he crossed paths there with friend of the podcast, Joseph Connor.
He did. Yeah. Joe was putting that in the, shouted him out. And sometime a few years later, he was appointed director of federal programs for the Brandywine School District. So basically in charge of moving the money around, which becomes a pattern here.
His favorite activity.
He loves move. He loves, look, you put, you, there's stuff in one cell, move it to another cell, put a little formula on there, choo. Then, that's real. That's real world experience, my friend. That's what I call real world experience.
Then in October 1987, he became staff assistant for Joe Biden, which he was in for a couple years until he became the deputy administrative officer for Newcastle County under Dennis Greenhouse, which that was his longest serving job. He held that for the next 5 years. He married the daughter of the Secretary of State in 1993, and then for some reason,
ring the Delaware Way bell.
In 1994, after briefly becoming Public Works Director, because someone else stepped down, he was appointed Deputy Chief of Staff to Carper, where he served for 3 years before becoming Secretary of Finance in 97. And then he served in that role for 3 years before he became Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor for 8 years, ate shit, ran for House, got that as a consolation prize for 6 years, and then he became Governor, and now he's Mayor of Wilmington.
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you what, bro. I don't hear any freaking real world experience in there. I played CYO basketball. I mean, you know, I remember like we'd have like a little Corpus Christi fucking St. Anthony's fucking grudge match there on a Saturday in like 1990 or whatever. That's not a real job, bro. So, I don't know what you're talking about. Now, if you want to defend your resume as real world experience, you can hit us up at highlandsbunker@gmail.com. And I would love to have you in as the first guest in our new, brand new studio. I'll let you sit in these $7,000 chairs. I'll ring the bell, ring the fancy brass bell right in your face. So, you know, if you have any questions about this, we can hash it out. I suspect that you don't, because I'm not Jake Owens. So, you know. I don't like that guy. Jake, no, I like Jake.
Yeah, Jake's great.
Jake, I love you. I love you, buddy. You're doing your best.
Do you want to just touch on his answer to, like, homelessness?
I would. Okay. I'm glad you brought it up, because I was like, but yes, because this is a big issue, I think, because of everything that's happened at Sam and the Friendship House, we should touch on this and then maybe talk about some other issues that are going on adjacent to this.
So he says, we have to find a better way to manage the population. If you've seen or you know one homeless person, you know one homeless person. They all have different challenges, and many have mental health and substance use issues. And the fact that many of them won't take your help is a problem. So, I mean, whose fault is it?
They won't take your help. Yeah, John Carney is a piece of garbage. He's a piece of human garbage. It's not a population to be managed. It's human beings, and it's no more of a you fucking cunt. I mean, the reason they won't take your help, FYI, in case you maybe you're confused, they won't take your help because they don't trust you, because I don't trust you. because they don't trust the cops, because the people that they have the interaction with the most. And I was at the sweep on 8th Street last month at SAM. And I saw how the caseworkers went out there, or the social workers. Their arms are the cops. So, yeah, they don't want to take your help because your help is fucking garbage. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that it's demeaning, it's dehumanizing, sometimes it's assault. It goes nowhere. There's no follow up. It's meted out at the tip of a gun. So if you want to know why people don't want to take your help, that's why. You condescending fucking puppet faced prick. Okay, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, but Rob, there's got to be some respect both ways.
No, there doesn't. I don't respect.
You don't think so?
No, I don't respect.
Do you think it starts with compassion and then it moves toward responsibility?
What kind of responsibility? Personal responsibility?
People have to be responsible.
I see.
And they don't just have full reign to do whatever they want and camp out, occupy bus shelters, etc. At the same time, we can't just brush them aside. We have an obligation as human beings to try to work with them. Like an alien species. I don't know.
Take me to your leader.
Yeah.
That's our leader.
Yeah,
I mean, once again, I'm glad that he's being made to at least make some sort of statement on these issues. That's good. You know, so I don't want to pretend like
there's going to be a council.
Could we have a task force on it? A homelessness task force?
Council probably is better because of Robert's rules of order. Don't forget.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, again, I'm glad he has to sort of answer for this, but like the stuff that's right below the surface like never gets, can't be said because it's like, I guess it's uncouth, or it's like, or then you get the other criticism from the other side than what you were saying before. Like, oh, he's not asking tough follow-ups, or he's not being like really pointed with some of these. He's asking them in the most gentle way he can. But if you go the other way and follow up and say, well, Przycki was an arm of BPG. He worked with BPG his whole career. And as a mayor, he just did everything that they wanted to do. And so now that they're building that new building, they're trying to steamroll fucking human beings off the street. Are you going to do the same thing? Seems like you probably will. Yeah, you know, if you even bring that up, it's like, it's commie fucking media outlet. You know, they have an agenda. Yeah, I have an agenda. Let's help the fucking people who don't have homes. That's my fucking agenda.
It's uncouth to say that BPG has been the recipient of tens of millions of dollars from the very Delaware Prosperity Partnership that we're defending right now. Although we can't provide, you know, one concrete example that I heard one, it was the talk of the Nabisco factory that would have come and like hemorrhaged all like our sewer infrastructure to the point where I just was imagining all these Cheez-Its flowing through the street. It was like,
we're inundated in Cheez-Its. So here's what we got going on, folks. The studio is undergoing a renovation of sorts. Rest assured, once this place gets back up and running, you're going to get the content that you always loved. But in the meantime, we're going to do some fun stuff. I mentioned a couple episodes ago, and I think last episode too, we're mobile now. I spoke to Joe Connor today. He wants to come out to the pub and do it like a little bitch session. And I said, bro, can we bring the microphones out there? He was like, you sure can. So we might do one live from our local.
I love it.
I might, you know, maybe I'll do some, I'll be like, he's going to play a deep screw shot here with reverse side to try to get on the nine ball on the top cushion. Maybe I'll do a little of that. So that'll be fun. We definitely are going to try to give you some sort of special coverage of things going on at Leg Hall. I joke around about going and yelling at people, and I'll still yell at people. Don't worry about that. But what I would like to also do is document some of the work that DCJ is doing at Legg Hall, some of the work Working Families is doing at Wet Legg Hall, talk to some of the advocates that are going down there in sort of partnership with these groups, some of the meetings that they're having with legislators about the issues that they're advocating for, because I just want to kind of like make it a little more clear to people what the hell is going on down there. So that should be fun. We also have, which Bill probably knows, maybe you want to speak to this a little bit, give a little teaser to it. So I don't know if you know, there's a guy, he owns X, the Everything app. He has a lot of, you wouldn't know this, but he has a lot of connections here in Wilmington Dell.
That's right.
He does.
Lots of P.O. boxes.
Lots of P.O. boxes, lots of attorneys, lots of people that are, quote, senior partners.
Ooh.
at firms.
I guess I he doesn't have many P.O. boxes here anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
No, no.
Corporate connections, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a history. There's a history there. And people that we know are sort of researching this history. You know, does it have a connection to the corporate law council? Does it have a connection to the people who basically make the laws of the state, because they, of course, never get questioned? If you don't know that, you got to go back. I'm not going to fucking, we can't fucking spoon feed you. You got to go back about maybe a year. Listen to those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to fucking hold your hand.
2 years maybe by now.
Well, we've done it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And we'll do it again. But yeah, we're working on that. That should be fun, because I'm interested. I'm interested in what Elon is up to, what his connections are here in Wilmington.
I want to ask him what "keck your friends" means. "Keck your friends, Anon," means. Carl, you got any idea?
Carl's always kecking
his
friends. He
seems to be stuck in 2017.
Yeah.
The gist that I get?
That's the gist I get, too.
Which we're about to be in 2017 again, I guess, so.
That's right.
It's fitting enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe this is a perfect time to sort of close it on this. I want to get both of your feelings on, like, the incoming administration here at the federal level. So I'll start it like this. Somebody shared a post either earlier this week or last week that was basically a story about Genocide McBride gone to the U.S. House. And it was a picture of her, I think with her niece maybe, walking into the House, getting sworn in, all that stuff. I didn't read the story. I don't need to read the story. I'm not a fucking rube. But I saw a post sort of underneath of it that just said, oh, so I guess she's just going to be an establishment corporate Democrat?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No shit. You fucking dummy.
You're just joining us here?
Yeah, like, would you get fooled? Well, I didn't get fooled, motherfucker. I see that. I mean, you see that even in like, circles. Like Steve Tanzer, you see him do it. Like, Godspeed, Sarah. Welcome. I'm like, she has the same fucking politics as fucking Mike Castle. Like, she's the trans Mike Castle. So, I don't know. I don't know what I'm fucking supposed to do with that. But in any case, I can't tell, and you guys are closer to, like, the
Senator Coons.
The Facebook. Yes, you guys are. You had dinner at his house last week. I saw you go over there. You and Jess had a squab and a red wine reduction with radishes and a nice mash. That sounds pretty good, actually. So is the sense on, like, Facebook that we're all doomed because the orange Cheeto? I mean, are we really living in 2017, as you said, or like, because I have a hard time. Well, I don't have a hard time. I literally don't care about that stuff because the people who could have done something about it didn't want to, and I couldn't do anything about it. So the idea of me, like, shitting my pants over Trump seems fucking stupid. But are we back in 2017? Is that where we're at?
I mean, a lot of the 2017-ish things are popping up again. Like, for example, Delaware Women for Inclusion and the Indivisible Group have actually merged now, 302 United.
I mean, that merger makes a lot of sense.
Which, like, I think it's a good move for them. And I they had a decently sized meeting, so we'll see where that goes. I will say it feels, and maybe this isn't totally fair for me to try to comment on because I was not fully involved just yet in early 2017. That's when I started getting involved locally. Was like that winter. But I will say it feels muted is my sense. Like everybody, like there was an initial kind of like big wave of dread right after the election, but in the weeks that have happened since, like it just feels like, oh, we're just back doing this again, but without the urgency. Like the stuff with Trump around like Canada and Greenland and the Panama Canal and Mexico, whatever.
Don't forget Canada.
Like it's all the same stuff, and like people are making the same jokes and memes about it. But they're, and some people are like, oh, this is such a big thing. Like it's, but it does not seem that there is the same energy behind it at this moment. I mean, I think that might change once he actually gets in office and starts to be able to fuck things up more directly. But because I remember the post 2016 pre-inauguration time was very weird, because that was when he was bringing everybody to the Trump Tower, if you remember all that, where it's like, oh, Kanye West is in Trump Tower. And that was kind of like,
remember the Mitt Romney and him went to 21. Yes. And he was like, he looked over his shoulder like, he was like, do I have to pay the bill?
You know, the main thing is this.
I think that was at Jean George, actually. Just I want to correct that. I believe that was at Jean George.
Yeah. At this go around, it seems like the big things have been obviously the weird territorial expansion stuff. There was the H-1B visa debacle.
Oh, you know what? Should we talk about that a little bit? Do we have time to talk about that? Okay.
And then what are the other Trump things that have been going on?
I don't know.
It's really been mostly that.
Yeah. Greenland and Canada caught my eye today. I had not been paying too much attention, but like he seems actually really serious this time. And I still wonder what this stems from.
I think he's serious about Greenland and not serious. I think the Canada thing, because if you hear him in the one of the press conferences, he's like, oh, we give them all this military stuff and money. I think he's just trying to, he's doing like a Trump, I'm cutting a deal thing by saying something ridiculous. With the Greenland thing, he does seem to be legitimately obsessed with that in a way that I think he's going to go for it, which like, I don't know. I don't really care.
No.
I mean, I don't care. Like, ask the people in Denmark. I don't really care.
Yeah,
either.
It's not, not my business.
I just don't understand what the, like, to what end, like, because is he going to invade Greenland and fight Europe? Like,
someone asked him.
Like, it's one thing to say, I want to cut taxes on the rich because you can just do that. It's one thing to say, I want to do this at the border because you control executive agencies that control the border. It's one thing to say, I want to, I don't know, you know, do something, you know, in the United States that's bad. And you're like, well, that's bad. But you can't just rename a Gulf or invade Denmark.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so you can't do it. Like, you literally cannot do it. So there are some things he says where, like, it's legitimately scary because he could probably just tell somebody to do it and maybe they'll do it. But, like, there's other things that are contingent upon a bunch of other stuff. And people are like, ha, that's real funny. We're not doing that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel like that sort of stuff's going to go, because it does feel like it's a lot of effort for not that much reward. Whereas, because the thing that I'm worried about is the stuff that we've all been worried about for years, because, like, we all know that a second Trump administration will do the bad things that often weren't necessarily talked about. But, like, he's going to continue to do bad stuff on the border that, like, Democrats were kind of encouraging them to do. But he's gonna, you know, there's gonna be
Trump,
a lot of
Trump immigration plan. We tried to do it and then they wouldn't comply.
Like Curtis Yarvin, Peter Thiel, weird like monarchist people are all buddy buddy with JD Vance, so like there's probably gonna be a bunch of those people in the administration. One of the things they tried to do at the end of this past administration was to reclassify all bureaucratic workers as political appointees, to basically repeal. They talk about repealing the 20th century. No better way to repeal the 20th century and a bit of the 19th than to get rid of the civil bureaucracy again.
Competent bureaucrats.
Yeah, need them.
An extinction level event for John Carney's, which to be fair doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah, actually, maybe this is a lot of Trump's fucking thing. You're like, I'm going after guys like John Carney. You're like, sounds pretty
right.
good.
And there's a lot of things where it's like, you know, LA is on fire right now, and there's a situation where now Trump's going to be president while LA is on fire. And it's like, that doesn't bring a lot of comfort, but it's all, and like the bird flu thing, there's a lot of stuff that really could go bad. And he's talking about, and that's why I think it's all the stuff is semi a distraction, because there's a lot of other stuff that could happen and probably will happen. And this is not really one of those things, it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the big sort of distractions that, again, he handled terribly in some fashion, like the George Floyd protests or like even COVID. I guess, you know, we were able to get the fucking vaccine, you know, I guess against
Operation Warp Speed.
Against all odds. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's good. It's certainly not. But he's already fucked around and done like, oh, the space, hey, make a space agency. Yeah. Make us the military space. They're like, okay. Like, I guess they did that, and that was, like,
they
a big
did that,
thing that
then,
they
like,
did.
I remember Brandon would post, like, congratulating Space Force on its anniversary.
Yeah.
It just becomes normal.
Astronaut Admiral.
And they made a Netflix show about it with Steve Carell.
Awesome.
So, like,
love to see it.
And, again, this is the reason the Democrats continue to lose, is because they make fun of it until like, they realize they lose, and they're like, oh, I guess we have a space program. Mm-hmm. Like, I suppose we have a Space Force now, like, space gunners or whatever. Like, yeah, it just seems kind of like the people who are telling the public to be extremely afraid of creeping fascism and like, and to be scared are basically the most fucking stupid lying clowns in this country, in this, like, political clowns in this country. So it's like, yeah, I mean, you're saying it, but you don't know anything. You lost another election to Trump. Nobody likes what you're selling. You're spending more time worrying about what Working Families Party is doing in Delaware, or what Bernie Sanders is doing, or what the left is doing. And AOC can't be, you know, the chair of a committee because she doesn't have enough time in, like Carney would say. So look, if that's the shit you're worried about, okay, fine. But then when you tell me that I need to come out for, you know, your dumb candidate, no one's coming. And no one will continue to come. And you'll continue to be irrelevant. Your name will be on, like, letterhead. Like, you'll be like Cassandra Marshall. You'll be like, I'm the chair of the city, whatever that fucking means. So, yeah, you are that. You get to be that. To what end? Like, you're just a loser. And so, like, I just don't care. And I don't care, and it's not my fault. It's Cassandra Marshall's fault, basically. Or, like, that's a good, it's a good substitute for whose fault it is. You know, it's just like, you actually don't really care either, so why should I? And I don't. So the H-1B visa thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize, so we talked a little bit about it when it started, like last week when it first came out about, like, you know, that there was going to be some infighting on the right or whatever. Now, once again, as I said before, this is something I know quite a bit about, working in finance and banking, working in sort of like like mathematicians. I worked with like people who like model, people who did modeling and algorithms and like engineers like that. And people want to exploit people from, I mean, the same reason we want to put a t-shirt factory in Bangladesh is the same reason we want an Indian or Pakistani person creating our, you know, linear regression models, because it's cheap, and you have them by the, you know, it's like a slavery situation, because their residency in this country is contingent upon them working 12 hours a day. And so, yeah, they love that shit. So, again, this is another example of Bernie being right. I think Bernie said something about this, and he was called, like, a racist, I guess, for saying, like, they actually do take jobs away from American people. I mean, you know, tech companies can lay off thousands of people, but they can continually apply for H-1B visas for people from the Far East, you know, Asia and the subcontinent. And it's all phony baloney, but it is interesting. Like, I don't, you know, it's like Republican infighting, so I don't really have a, like a dog in it. But I don't know if what you guys you took from it. Just you guys don't have sort of the same experience in history. You might kind of don't, you know, but that's been my experience is that Bernie is correct again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. But with, yeah, Vivek's post was it was sort of like, I don't know how old he is, but I imagine he's like around 40, like I am. And because all the cultural references, like I was, it's funny because like I do not watch television anymore. You know, I don't call it TV because TV is a nickname and nicknames are for friends and television is no friend of mine. But I used to watch a ton after school and then get like C+, B- in science class because I would watch Saved by the Bell. I would watch Family Matters. And so I just thought that was really funny that he was like, be more like the studious students in these programs you shouldn't even watch in the first place. Like, be more like Urkel. America loves Urkel.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that Urkel and Stefan were the same person. Like,
yeah.
It was just a trope. It was just a TV trope.
Yeah.
You have to... I don't know.
But then other, like, socialization stuff, too. Like, don't be the kid... Like, don't go to sleepovers. Like, be sort of just antisocial enough to, like, still get good grades, but, like, don't be perceived as, like, a friend of others. Focus on your marks.
Do science fucking contests. Don't have any friends.
Yeah.
Because we don't want you to have friends. We want you to work for 14 hours a day on our fucking scams. I mean, Vivek made his money on a fucking scam.
Yeah.
A fakeroo. You know, so it's just like, first of all, who the fuck is you to be telling anybody what to do? Like, you're a phony baloney, number one. But nobody cares about that. You know,
if we're talking about American culture, there's nothing more American than that.
Yes, except that he's a brown man. So that's they hate that.
Yeah.
And again, on one hand, you know, they like that he's on their side. But as we saw with this controversy, they don't like the other part of it. This is sort of like, let me throw this out there and maybe this will generate even more of a conversation. I really looked at this as something that we always go back to. In the sort of Bernie Clinton, 20 years ago story that kind of led us to this was the NAFTA thing. Like, yeah, people like Vivek and Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Barsacco Crumbo and all of those people thought like, hey, let's get make sure we can put factories in Bangladesh to make T-shirts. And junk from China, and we can put these factories in Mexico and pay them $2 an hour and all of this stuff. And that's actually good because of business.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. But, like, regular people are like, is it? I mean, it's good for you.
Yeah.
It makes sense if you're, like, looking to milk any cent out of it that you're looking for, but, like... To what end?
Yeah, what's the plan next? What's happened when that stuff dries up?
Yeah, the HB1 visa is like the NAFTA thing. Like, how can we arrange this? This is why economics is fake. How can we arrange all of this to optimize the money that we siphon off of it and make the people who are involved in it seem like they're like the good guys? Like, hey, this lady in India who sews 90 pieces of thing, 90 for 90 cents or whatever, what a worker. You know, it's just like, really? Yeah, people are like actually starting to stand up and be like, I don't think so. This happened this week with the new East Side Charter fucking STEM Center. I'm like, yeah, it's so great that people who get a chance to go to a charter school can learn to code. Is it though? I don't think so. But again, I don't know how we change this. It was interesting to see this infighting on the Republican side because I think about it over here, but no liberal would ever like even think about like why opening a STEM center at Eastside Charter is actually fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I Of course, I'm still immersed and still will be for the next several months in Knights of Labor stuff. So, of course, I got to bring it back to this.
KOL, baby.
Because I think this is an interesting thing because there are people who are trying. This has been the long-term project of the last 8 years for a lot of people, which is to try to bring the working class, make it like a Republican working class space, which like they've moved in that direction. And obviously there is all the talk about working class movement from Democrats, which is definitely a thing that is happening, and a lot of them are moving to Republicans, not all of them. But yeah, this idea of contract labor, it's very interesting because it was a basically, if you're talking about what the original labor movement back in the 1800s was fighting against, it was contract labor of various sorts, because you had like prison contract labor, which of course still also a thing. But with the H-1B type contract labor, and this used to be like Chinese people or Italian miners or, you know, this or that back in the 1880s. And because there is a two-pronged element of that, because there is the neoliberal, quote unquote, I think it's, you know, the we need to maximize profits and that means reducing costs and it'll be better for everybody because prices come down, yada, yada. But then there is also that, and I think this is, based on the discourse I saw, the blood and soil aspect of like these people are subhuman scum. And this is where it got really, this is where most of the like anti H-1B visa discourse was, which was just like these Indian people, they shit in the street, they eat their own crab. They're, like, it's just like incredibly
they're
racist.
They're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs.
Basically, yeah. And that's also very old because that was with the Knights of Labor, with the Chinese workers specifically. They were like, they're literally subhuman, they can't organize, they can't do this, they can't do that. And it's very interesting because like people have noted that like anti and Indian racism has become super prevalent online for some reason, and I don't really know exactly what causes that, because I'm not a big fan of India the country right now because of Modi, but like,
oh, like the subcontinent of India. Yeah,
it's a very weird like focus, because it was Haitians for a little bit, and now it's Indians, and I think a lot of it's just coming from like tech guys that are just very racist and like work with a bunch of immigrants that they're maybe not super comfortable with, and that's part of it. But also just some that seems like very fabricated and just like, oh, we're finding video clips from the poorest parts of India where people like, yeah, are living subsistence lives that kind of sucks. And so it is very interesting, this divide, because there is like a populist element of it, which is a very real, which is if you increase the base of workers, it's a supply and demand thing. The supply of workers goes up, the price of labor goes down, which means that people get paid less. Like, that's just a very basic economic fact. And if you're trying to limit, if you're trying to raise wages, limiting the labor force is a big part of that. That's why union closed shops are a thing. But then there's also, yeah, that identity based like blood and soil, like we can't have these people. And it seems to be like a country of the week every once in a while, because it was like Haiti and it's India. I'm sure it'll be fucking Thailand next week. Like, you know, they'll find different reasons to hate different people. And I do think part of the thing on the left, and I think Bernie does do this pretty well, which is like, how do you separate the two, which for the right is very intertwined, that like native labor force and the native identity are very closely intertwined. But how do you separate that and still have compassion for the Indian worker who's like selling 90 things for 90 cents? And like, she actually deserves rights and a union and higher wages and all that stuff. But then also be like, well, but that being said, if we are trying to protect these people, these workers that we are trying to organize here, like, we need to have some sort of arrangement where that's not going to. And I think the answer is something more like an international labor movement at the end of the day, which is kind of implausible with given the way that the various countries of the world are set up and the various trade organizations of the world are set up. It makes it very difficult. But the right would rather kind of cut everybody down to size, where I think our argument around it needs to be, we need to lift everybody up and do so in a way that is not.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Racist. And again, do I think, and I said it before, I mean, obviously I look at this as a whole issue. Like, the issue of HB1 visas is no different than the issue of, you know, making t-shirts in the Desh for slave wages. It's basically the same.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any racist kind of, but you are correct that you have to be careful.
Because you don't have the racist things, but a lot of people.
Right.
Do.
Right. It's actually, and while a, like an international labor movement, for the reasons that you said, is like, would be, you know, almost impossible, extremely complicated and difficult for all the dynamics that are out there. Just because there isn't an international labor movement, when you analyze these things, you have to have an international outlook. You have to look at it in context about what's going on. Like, yes, I mean, the HB1 visa thing is exploitation, just like the T-shirt factory in China, just like the factory in Bangladesh, just like whatever, the Mexico.
Or just like the systems where they would bring in migrant workers from Mexico for one season, then deport them all at the end of the season.
It's the same as the Chinese coming here and building our railroads.
Yeah, it's all the same.
It's the same.
We are looking for a broader source of labor so we can pay people less.
Yeah, find people that can be exploited and exploit them to whatever extent you can. And that's really what it is.
And put it whatever regulations we can in order to most properly exploit them.
To make sure absolutely.
That like, they cannot organize themselves. They cannot.
Which is what Vivek is doing because he was like, these people are so great. They're coming here, you know, under these situations where they're being able to stay here and live here are contingent upon, you know, working for Elon Musk or whatever. Yeah, it's garbage. But it's not garbage because they're black. It's not garbage because they're from, you know, the Hindu Kush. It's not garbage because they're Chinese. It's garbage because it's garbage. It's because they're
being
exploited by capital.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, you know, it's not garbage because your uncle got laid off, although I'm very upset that your uncle got laid off. But that's not, you know, that's not really what it's about.
If your uncle gets laid off, it's not because of that guy that they hired from India. It's because of
Pakistani engineer.
You got to pick your. You got to find the right enemy. Which at least they've realized that Vivek is the enemy.
Yeah, folks. Thank you for joining us. I hope if you want to contribute to the studio refurbishment, I would appreciate that. It's patreon.com/theislandsbunker. Look, I know that most of you will never be able to sit in these fancy chairs or, you know, see the light. I mean, we hired, I think it's $4,000 or $5,000 for the lighting person to come in and like figure out how to light this.
That's it.
And then I was like, we're not even videoing it. Why are we doing this? And I was like, well, because it has to be the best, you know? And so I was like, look, I think it was $6,200 for that, just lighting. It's going to be incredible. No one else is doing this shit. No one. Oh, I do want to put out one before we break. This is an all points bulletin. Some of the criticism I've gotten for some of our coverage of the special election thing. We really hit SD1 very hard, and although I've insulted fucking Ray Siegfried pretty much as I can, right? I mean, I basically like pissed in his mouth for, but apparently I haven't covered what exactly happened there and what the dynamic is in SD5 as much as I possibly could. I'm willing to do that. If someone wants to pitch me on how to, you know, further discredit Ray Siegfried, I would be happy to do it. So just, you know, hit us up again, highlandsbunker@gmail.com. And you know we'll go after Ray again. I don't see why we wouldn't.
I really liked. I listened to that episode. Really loved it. One detail, as someone else who attended, was I thought it was so funny. Multiple times I heard people yell out, "Do we need to use a number 2 pencil?" That was just. I think that was such a sweet detail about that.
I always carry a number 2 pencil just in case. You never know. You know, you might do a Scantron.
Yep.
You might be Scantron, and you got to have it. I have it right here. Because you never fucking know.
That's my takeaway.
Always carry a number 2 pencil. Carl, what are some things that we can look forward to with the Working Families Party? Because I actually do, and you can cut this out if you want to, but I do want to go down with the portable rig and like let some advocates talk about what they're advocating for. If you do an event with some elected officials, I'd like to cover that and just show people what's up. So I'm kind of down for that. I haven't really seen what's going on at the legislature yet, but can you give us a quick sort of preview for the next couple months?
Yeah, well, As people may know, House leadership has been pretty quiet around what their plans are. So a lot of it really does rely on that. I think we're probably looking at a fairly quiet January, is my guess, in terms of actual things happening. Surprise.
Dynamic. It's a dynamic body.
But I do think that once we get back in March, because June is that JFC session, which could also be interesting because it's going to be Myers.
February is JFC.
Because February is JFC session. It's going to be Myers' first JFC session. I don't know how much of the budget he will have rewritten compared to Carney, so that can be interesting. But yeah, I do think starting in March, it's still going to start looking a lot more stuff going on, is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you only have a 6 month, session, you really got to take the first 2 months just to like get
test it out.
Just do whatever. I mean, these people are so important. I mean, they're so fucking important. They need time to kind of like figure out what's going on. I mean, Krista Griffiths, Brian Townsend, they need time. You know, they can't just go in there and just fucking start working.
I mean, the Senate's been saying what they're going to do. The House hasn't.
Well, the Senate says what they were going to do until it comes time to do it. Yeah, Brian. Actually, we saw you drop your name from that list once that police reform package was going to get filed by Cindy Romer. We saw you drop your name from it when Misty was actually transitioning from ODS to Myers administration. So we see you, FYI. We see you. I'm sure that Nelson Mandela would have also taken his name off the list as a freedom fighter. You know, and as a real hero, he would have also said, you know, something like, it's too soon to fucking, you know, do the judicial records bill. And so, you know, we can't do it. I'm sure Mandela would have said that. I'm sure. We see you, motherfucker. We see all of you, actually. That's what's cool about this project, is we know what you're all doing. We know that it's true. We know that there's really nothing you can do about it. I mean, I would love to get sued. I've been asked to be sued for libel or what's the other one?
Defamation.
What's the other one too? There's libel and
slander.
Slander. I slander people. I want to be sued for slander.
Yeah.
Because what I want to do, you know what the best thing that always goes through my head? Discovery.
Oh yeah.
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 Yeah. Carney will go through, like, we have key. We'll go through every email you've sent in the last 10 years with keywords. We'll put the fucking keyword on there.
What is password?
We'll see. Yeah, I would love to be sued for defamation or libel or anything. And then we'll go to what they call, what the legal profession calls discovery. And then we'll look at all your shit. We'll see what you're doing, what you're up to.
An email to himself. No subject. Body is just www.philadelphiaeagles.com.
Go birds. Oh, God damn it. All right. We'll be back with you soon. Fuck it. Left is best.